representing Vincent Batkin, and I'd like to reserve 3 minutes, if I may.
All right.
Sure.
Thank you, counsel. Let me, before we get started, though, there's two counsel, one for the union and one for Lockheed on the other side, and I just want to verify that you worked out in advance how you are going to split up the argument time. Is that correct?
That's correct, Your Honor.
And Mr. Bergo, am I pronouncing that correctly?
Yeah.
You're taking how many minutes?
I will take the first 8 minutes, and then Ms. Detweiler's taking the next 7.
All right.
Unless, of course, you're done with me, in which case I'll defer the rest of mine to her.
So. All right. You can all see the clock. Try to keep track of your own time, but I'll try to remind you as well. Thank you.
Thank you.
Go ahead, counsel.
Yeah, thank you, Your Honor. I would like to focus on some significant contradictions in the defendant's answering brief, and as well as in the declaration of Robert Westbrook, who was the union representative. The contradictions make the defendant's claims factually impossible and demonstrate bad faith. On July 25, 2016, Westbrook proposed to Batkin a new proposed agreement and asked him to accept his voluntary resignation, which Batkin rejected and asked Westbrook to continue with his grievance. And in reply, Westbrook stated, "Just keep in mind that there is no guarantee that the union will take the grievance to arbitration. Our attorney will review and let me know if he thinks the union would prevail in arbitration." Union in discovery, the union also claimed that legal counsel Terry Jansen further provided advice to the union regarding the merits of the grievance. This is in record ER 55. However, Batkin recently discovered that Terry Jansen had voluntarily resigned his bar membership more than 2 years earlier.
Why is that relevant?
Your Honor, all these excuses, so many times the union and the arguments, they keep saying, as you'll see, they consulted the union. The attorney. Attorney does not think that your grievance has merit. Grievance was drafted by the union representative Westbrook, and repeatedly, the union gave two excuses for not taking the grievance to arbitration. One, the union attorney says so, as I will pointed out to the quotation. And then another one is that Batkin had taken an offered plea, and allegedly Westbrook says, well, that gave him concern about this effect into the settlement. Yet, as I will point out, this had a secret settlement agreement on August 8th, yet offered plea was done more than a month later on September 9th. So the initial decision was done on August 8th, but completely all along, they kept it secret, as I will like to present the chain of events leading to that one. So there is no excuse for the union not to take the case to arbitration. He never came up with any reason other than, I'm sorry, may I continue?
There a question, Judge Simon?
Not yet.
No.
Okay. So anyway, Westbrook further continued in his, over the next couple of months, they continued to discuss possible settlement terms with Lockheed. However, Westbrook could not have had those discussions over the next couple of months because just 14 days later, on August 8, 2016, Lockheed and the union executed their secret settlement agreement without a notice to Batkin. Batkin's attorney learned of the secret settlement agreement almost a year later, directly from Lockheed's corporate attorney, Scott Feldman. Now, in record ER 55, union claims that, quote, union representatives discussed the merits of the grievance with their legal counsel and ultimately negotiated the best settlement it could in light of the plaintiff's guilty plea. Now, number one, the attorney, legal counsel was resigned his Bomber membership more than 2 years earlier, and guilty plea was done more than a month after their August 8th.
Counsel, now I do.
And the significance of that, again, counsel, is that is you're questioning the credibility of Mr. Westbrook's representation as to consulting with a lawyer? Is that the significance of that?
That is one of them, yet also, Your Honor, in the same declaration, he says guilty plea he took into consideration, but guilty plea came up more than a month after the settlement agreement they secretly signed on August 8th.
So, counsel, let me understand how this fits in legally. In your claim of unfair representation by the union, it can only be based either on bad faith, arbitrariness, perhaps, discrimination. I'm not hearing any discrimination argument. Arbitrariness arguably doesn't apply here to a question of judgment. Bad faith, as I understand it, requires evidence of fraud, deceit, or dishonest conduct. Number one, do you agree? And if so, if you do agree, what is your best evidence of fraud, deceit, or dishonest conduct?
Your Honor, whole series of this whole process dragged on months and months. And apparently, as we referred in the opening brief, Batkin had a problem about an issue with Lockheed a couple of months earlier. And he had problems with Lockheed. And apparently, at that time, Batkin testified that nobody ever came up to him. He had complained about the safety issues. And then ever since, they dragged on the grievance process, months and months, and they would never keep him up to date. And then the most important thing is that perhaps September 21, they called for a meeting. And at that meeting, allegedly, Westbrook says, well, he talked this case, reviewed this with the union attorney and discussed this grievance, and attorney does not think that grievance has a merit. Yet, he never discloses the fact that more than a month earlier, well, back in August 8th, they already signed the secret agreement, and yet never mentioned to Batkin that they had this agreement already signed about a month earlier.
But didn't that agreement on August 8th say that if Batkin is cleared of the charges, he may reapply as an external candidate? So it's not, they didn't prejudge it. They were waiting to see what would happen.
That is, but they never disclosed that. Now, August 8th is their secret agreement. However, that is one of the issues. But Batkin...
So you're saying that the bad faith is the lack of disclosure, not the actual substance of the agreement?
And absolutely, Your Honor, how disclosure and kept the whole process secret until apparently inadvertently Lockheed's corporate attorney inadvertently disclosed it from the East Coast and saying, look, initially, as I was going to come on this list, initially Scott Feldman said, okay, he can't come and get his job back because Baskin's attorney contacted corporate Lockheed. And then he said, sorry, he said, you can't get the job back because of the agreement. What agreement? Oh, so he emailed. Then that August 8th agreement first time came up. And also very
important. Counsel, how was the August 8th agreement materially different than the corrective action request that your client signed?
August 8th agreement, it says, he would have to accept his voluntary resignation, period. And then he may apply later on, or Lockheed wouldn't object if Batkin would try to get unemployment benefits to that effect. Essentially, they gave no relief to Batkin. So then, did I answer that question? I'm sorry, Your Honor. I'm sorry. I'm nervous.
Quite all right.
So September 21 meeting, he alleges talked with the attorney and then never tells, look, we already have, back in August, we already had this agreement, never disclosed that. The obvious reason came up is that later on, the general counsel disclosed the August 8th agreement, and the date is August 8th. Later on, Westbrook came up, he said, well, it was signed on October 28th, and there is an earlier version of it. That's what he claims, earlier version of it, but it did not go into effect until October 20th. There is no evidence in record that there is another agreement dated October 28th. This is like in violation of the, you know...
Counsel, what motivation would the union have for intentionally and in bad faith not disclosing the August 8th agreement? What would be the reason why they wouldn't disclose that to Mr. Batkin?
I believe, Your Honor, is that going back to email communications, they got themselves in a box, because August 8th came 14 days after Westbrook and Batkin had this communication, says, I want to continue with my grievance. And then 14 days later, they signed this agreement, and then later on, other meetings came up, and they were in a conflict. That's the reason, obvious reason, where later on, Westbrook claims, and in the briefs, they say, well, it was signed on October 28th.
I'm hearing your argument be that the union intentionally did not tell Batkin about the August 8th agreement. Yes. Why would they intentionally not tell him?
Your Honor, I think the record would show that they had, a couple of months earlier, Batkin had complained about a safety issue with Lockheed. And at that time, during the deposition, well, he complained about these problems that he had with Lockheed. And then the attorney asked Batkin, well, that is not the union, and that is Lockheed. Well, union joined forces with Lockheed, and they never supported Batkin, and they kept him, like, as an overall record, they kept him like a mock man. They looked for an excuse to get rid of him. They were encouraging him to get a job somewhere else. They simply were trying to get back to him, because several months earlier, he raised this safety concern, electrical hazard issue, and he complained to, I believe, more than one place. And then that attitude continued, because Lockheed man and union representative, they were just helping each other. So I'm sorry.
I know you wanted to save some time. We're down to a little under 2.5 minutes. So would you like to save the balance for that time?
I'd like to. Oh, this is all. Yes, I will. I guess I'll have to reserve it. Yes,
thank you. Okay. Thank you. Mr. Bayergo?
Yes, Your Honor. May it please the court. On behalf of Lockheed, my name is Anthony B. Birgo. I'm taking the first 8 minutes, and I'll focus on the issues of the second prong in any hybrid 301 case like this is, which Mr. Chabet did not address at all. And that is, in order to prevail on a hybrid 301 claim, Mr. Chabuk, on behalf of Mr. Batkin, must create a submissible case, both of the breach of duty of fair rep against the union as well as a submissible case of a breach of the collective bargaining agreement by Lockheed. He does not address the latter of those at all. And I know the court's very aware that the grant of summary judgment is subject to de novo review, but it's very important to understand that Mr. Chibuk's and Mr. Badkin's conclusory and uncorroborated self-serving testimony is not sufficient in any employment case.
Counsel, was Mr. Badkin an at-will employee, or could he only be terminated for just cause?
He could only be terminated for just cause under the collective bargaining agreement.
All right. And under Article 4, Section 2 of the collective bargaining agreement, it struck me as an odd place, the employee placement article and loss of seniority, for there to be this provision requiring the five-day justification. If you can explain that briefly, I'd be interested in that. But more significantly, it does say that he can be deemed to be a voluntary resignation if he misses the 5 days without valid justification. Where do I find in the record, without having to go into the declarations that the district judge excluded, that being in jail is not a valid justification?
Well, I think there's multiple ways of looking at it. First, relative to reading the just cause provision in light of the other provisions of the contract, all those have to be read as an integrated whole. Second of all, with respect to that particular language, you have to look at, has the plaintiff in the case below, has the appellant created any sort of submissible case other than his own argument that that has been treated in the past by the parties as a valid justification? And when we look at valid justification, you've got to look at, does the employee bear blame for the situation as to why he could not report himself, or is the plaintiff, is the employee responsible for the situation? Being in jail due to your own conduct, which Mr. Badkin acknowledges, he engaged in it, he pled guilty to it, is no different than going on a 10-day bender and not reporting either. Again, the employee is responsible for that.
But he was fired, I think, on the 18th, while he was still in jail. So for all we knew at the time, he could have been fully acquitted. He could have been found to have been improperly taken into custody. Yet he was fired before anybody even learned whether he had a valid justification or not.
And that would be consistent with, and there's no showing by plaintiff that it's inconsistent with, the practice of, on a 5-day no call, no show, you terminate everyone automatically. Now, and showing the good faith of the union and indeed the good faith of Lockheed, the grievance said, look, if in fact he's exonerated of these charges and found to be without fault, either because the charges are false or because he has a valid defense for his discharge of the weapon at his daughter's boyfriend, any of those things envisioned him being able to come back to work if, in fact, he was exonerated. That's entirely consistent with, the parties are, in fact, applying the is there valid justification for not calling, for which he doesn't bear personal responsibility for the reasons that happened, as well
as... Does Lockheed have a written policy that the self-report of not being able to show up at work has to be done by the employee or legal counsel? It seems, in the record, it seems like there was only declarations suggesting that.
It's the practice that it must be done consistent with all the other practices that we don't discuss personal employment, medical, and other issues with people other than the employee themselves. You end up in a slippery slope those situations.
I mean, it's just a practice. There's no written policy about that. Is that correct?
In the record, I don't believe there's a written policy that shows the declarations themselves obviously establish, yeah, this is the long-established practice. And indeed, the federal courts in 301 cases have long acknowledged that, look, you have to read a collective bargaining agreement in light of the practices between the parties. That's why the standard is so deferential to the decisions of the employer and particularly the union in deciding, no, this is consistent with what we've done in the past. This is what we know the practice to be. This isn't an individual employment contract between Mr. Badkin and Lockheed. This is a contract between the company and the union, and the union, in representing the collective, has to be given the discretion to determine, is this a fight worth fighting, or is this some chaotic tilting at windmills here that doesn't make sense to exhaust the limited resources of the union and the collective to fight a fight that it shouldn't fight? And if it decides it did in this case, look, the best outcome for Mr. Badkin, considering the pendency of these charges, is that if he can be exonerated, then he can come back to work. Which, to address what Mr. Chibuk indicated here, there was no delay or dragging feet. From May to September, Mr. Badkin, due to his own conduct, was in a in never never land of and unable to move the process forward. He blames the union for not telling him of the settlement, which, as Judge Simon indicated, or in fact, I think it was Judge Bumate, you indicated, the August 8th agreement was consistent with the request made back in the May grievance by Mr. Badkin. If I can be exonerated, then I come back to work. And then immediately after that, rather than Mr. Badkin going back to the union and saying, hey, my court case is coming up, we're talking about settling it, he blames the union on not having contact when it had already been resolved from the outset back in May. Here's the request. The request is, if I'm exonerated, can I come back to work? Again, this comes back to a lack of personal responsibility by Mr. Badkin. I see that my time is up, and I would yield to Ms. Detweiler.
Thank you.
Good morning. May it please the court. Christina Detweiler, representing International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers, Local District Lodge 160 and Local Lodge 282. The court can affirm the dismissal on any three grounds. They can find there was no breach of contract, you can find there was no breach of the duty of fair representation, and or you can find that the claim was untimely filed. I'm going to start with talking about the statute of limitations issue.
Let me suggest that why don't we get a response immediately to the plaintiff's lead argument that by failing to disclose the August 8th agreement, that at least presents a genuine issue for a fact finder on whether there was deceitful action or dishonest conduct. What's the union's response to that?
The August 8th agreement was communicated in substance to Mr. Badkin. It was communicated to him in July at a meeting. It was communicated to him again in September. And the fact that he understood those terms, he acknowledges and admits in an email that he sends to the union on April 26, 2017, wherein he states, quote, "It is my understanding that the union and Lockheed Martin agreed I would get my job back after I was absolved of the assault charge and my access to Naval Base Kitsap was reinstated." He understood the terms of the settlement agreement that was made with the union and Lockheed. He didn't get a copy of it, that's true. But there was no bad faith. No one was hiding anything from him. It wasn't secret.
All right, well, to be precise, I mean, wasn't he absolved of the charges that were initially asserted against him? Certainly the charges that were alleged against him as of June and July and August of 2016, namely the charge of first-degree assault. he was absolved of that charge.
He was absolved of that charge, but he pled guilty to other charges that were included in with those charges as secondary offenses.
So are you saying that the charges to which he pled guilty were also alleged from the outset?
Yes.
Where do I find that in the excerpt of record or the supplemental excerpt?
I don't have that handy. I know that is in the supplemental record, and it looks like my other counsel is maybe looking for that, and maybe you'll have an answer before we're done. It wasn't secret. And as Judge Simon, as you indicated, the standard for duty of fair representation is there's only a breach if the conduct was arbitrary, discriminatory, and bad faith. If the conduct involved judgment, then arbitrariness falls out and we're left with bad faith or discrimination.
Although you say arbitrariness falls out with judgment, but that's not exactly what Peterson versus Kennedy said, right? And so how do I square Peterson versus Kennedy with the Moore versus Bechtel and the Demetrius versus Transportation Workers case? Can they be squared?
I think they can be squared. I think what Kennedy was saying was that where a union exercises judgment and makes an informed decision, that we don't get to go back and look critically at that, whether we agree with that decision, whether we think that was a good decision, wise decision. We're just going to look at what was that informed decision based on facts. And if it is, then we can't be said to be arbitrary. And then all we're left with is, was it discriminatory or was it in bad faith? All that we have here for the bad faith is apparently this idea that it was a secret settlement. And again, it wasn't secret. He was informed of the terms, and he indicated, and the evidence shows he understood what those terms were. I think some of this goes to the district court striking our supplemental affidavit, the second affidavit from Westbrook, because in there he directly responds to this secret settlement allegation, which hadn't been made previously. We didn't have that. It wasn't said in deposition. We didn't know that was an allegation we were going to have to respond to when we submit our opening papers and Westbrook's opening declaration. And the supplemental one directly responded, and the district court acknowledged that it directly responded to those allegations and arguments made by plaintiff in his reply briefing. So for the district court to strike that, I think, was an error. And certainly the district court should have invited briefing on it before ruling on it. Speaking to the statute of limitations, in this case, the grievance was actively worked from May through September. There were discussions with Badkin. He was consulted. He was in the loop, and it culminated in September. And then nothing. There's a dispute about what happened at that September meeting, but it's not disputed that from that point forward, Badkin didn't inquire once about his grievance. He didn't ask. There was communication between him and the union official, talking about jobs and applications. But at no point in the next 7 months does he say, hey, what's going on with my grievance? When am I having that arbitration hearing? What are you doing to get me back to work? Nothing. The next communication comes in April 2017 in that email that I read to you, wherein he doesn't ask about the grievance. He instead asks about the settlement because he knew his grievance had been settled. And yet, for his case to be timely, it has to be based on conduct that happened May 2nd or in the future, between May 2nd and November 2nd. And nothing happened then. Well, he knew before May 2nd that his case had been settled by the union and that the union was taking no further action on his behalf. I'm going to turn it quickly back over to Anthony and see if he found that site for you.
Please, please.
I did not find other charges other than the first degree assault in the record as submitted. I will note that the original requested relief was not that he be absolved of the charges,
that he be absolved of wrongdoing as provided in the allegations and charges.
Right, and I found that potentially ambiguous because it said wrongdoing as provided in the allegations and charges sent me to want to know exactly what the charges and allegations were. I see the factual allegations, but the only charge I could find in the record was the charge of first-degree assault with a deadly weapon.
Yeah, actually, that was in the record. That's actually not the charges, but the arrest that resulted. What the prosecutor brought initially is actually not in the record. It's the arrest record, which says he's arrested for first-degree assault with the probable cause statement behind it, and then the ultimate plea agreement that's reached thereafter.
All right. Thank you, counsel. You're over time. There's time on rebuttal, so let's go back to Mr. Batkin's counsel.
Yes, Your Honor. Briefly, I think I have 2 minutes. First of all, Batkin was not fired for cause. He was fired in the pretext of voluntary resignation. However, CBA specifically provides that unless he has a valid justification for his inability to call, that requires a pre-termination hearing. He wasn't. The last day he was supposed to call, that is when he was fired. And misdemeanor.
Counsel, do you agree that it was the practice of the parties that only the legal counsel or the employee himself can
absolutely disagree, Your Honor. There is no such thing. In fact, in my reply brief, or in my brief, I did cite Section 8, I believe, of the CBA says this agreement is the sole agreement. Yes, the defendants try to bring all kinds of industry standards. There's no such thing in the record. And CBA says it is the sole agreement. I did give the section citation to it. And again, misdemeanor was not, plea deal, misdemeanor was not in the initial charge. And as I said, he was denied the pre-termination hearing where he should have been allowed to come to work. And then he says, come over here. We need to talk to you. Let's see what your justification was for inability to call in person. Even though CBA doesn't require in-person requirement, there's no such a requirement. Also, I cited in my brief, Your Honor, Sherry Hendricks of Lockheed told McKenna, the daughter, that Union Stewart was going to see Batkin in jail. That's an acknowledgement that they did receive the notice from Batkin. So also, the terms Batkin cited in his email, that's the terms for his satisfaction. That's not a term or something that, oh, he should file a complaint, I guess. He says he's supposed to get back to work once the assault charge is dismissed and base access was restored. That's not consistent with what actually a separate agreement, the August 8th agreement, states. So the timing delay was caused. Aurora Record does show that all caused by the union. And anyway, I think, I have to.
Yeah, you're a little bit over time.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, I'm finished then. I suppose. Thank you, Your Honor.
We thank all counsel for your arguments today. The matter is taken under submission and we'll issue a decision in due course.
Thank you.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
You're welcome. The next two cases, Black versus Grant County Public Utility District and Vatan versus QTC Medical Services and Lockheed Martin Corporation, have been submitted from the briefs and record. So that concludes our argument calendar for this morning. We're in recess until tomorrow.
This court for this session stands adjourned.